This is Issues and Ideas here on KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White. From the moment Central Coast Congresswoman Lois Capps announced her plans to retire at the end of this term, candidates looking to fill her spot began to announce their intentions to run. KCBX is inviting each registered candidate onto the show, Issues and Ideas, in order to share their visions for the 24th Congressional District, which includes all of San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties, as well as a small portion of Ventura County in the Los Padres National Forest. Santa Barbara native Justin Farid is one of two Republicans currently running for the seat and the only one who ran for it in 2014. In fact, he came very close to winning the primary, coming just a half percentage point from challenger Chris Mitchum. He is currently the vice president of a Santa Barbara-based design and manufacturing company that specializes in sports medical devices. He has also served as a legislative aide for a Republican congressman from Kentucky. Justin Farid joins us today in studio to discuss his vision for serving the 24th District should he be elected to the seat in November 2016. And welcome to Issues and Ideas.
Thank you so much, Randall, for having me on today.
What did you learn during your previous run for the 24th District that you'd like to use this time around in order to improve your chances of winning the primary?
Well, the goal every day is to always get better and to learn more about the job and everything that you intend to do and all the people that you intend to represent. I suppose when you start a campaign from scratch 5.5 months out with no real political base or actual campaign structure or team, you have to learn as much as you can as you go forward, both on the operation front of an organized campaign. But you also we made it a main tenet in our campaign to go out and meet with and speak to and with as many people as possible. And so through the process, you learn more and more about your district, your constituency. You learn how to run a more effective campaign. And I think you could see that even now relative to our last campaign. We're actually further along today than we were at any point in our last campaign. So you learn a lot more about the issues, about the people, about what matters to the people. I've gotten so passionate about serving our constituency in my home town in Washington, D.C. It's been one heck of an experience, and I'm very honored for an opportunity to be in this position.
Because you came so close during the most recent primary, was it your plan all along to run this time around?
No, I think anything you ever do in life, you have to fail to succeed. And for me, I had no idea. I knew how I felt about what was going on in Washington, D.C., the dysfunction. The inability to actually set strategies and execute them for the common good of the people in the country, the lack of representation in specific congressional districts. There was a lot of things that bothered me about what I saw when I was serving under Congressman Ed Whitfield from Kentucky, and I felt that perhaps going out and having conversations with people, maybe a lot of people felt the same way, and I found that they did. For me, I had no idea how that would turn out, but I knew that the only way that you could is by doing it. And through the process, a lot of people got really excited and engaged in the process. You had people who had not necessarily been paying attention to politics who all of a sudden wanted to be a part of it. So a disenfranchised base of voters got active and involved. And to me, that was one of the positives that came from it. But in retrospect, you have to, and in reflection, you have to think about whether this is the best thing for the district. And so many people, hundreds of emails that I would receive from people, comments that I would get when I was walking out in the community, of people encouraging me to do it again. And of course, like I said, I'm very, very passionate. And when you're really trying to make a difference, you have to recognize that it takes time and a lot of effort and growth and development. And so by virtue of the fact that there were people that were so supportive, and I think you could see that by virtue of the endorsements that I've garnered and earned, the amount of contributors and volunteers that we already have within this campaign, we had to build out a potential exit strategy from ProBand so that I could pursue this not only with the campaign.
ProBand's the company that you're the vice president of.
Yes, we manufacture and distribute sports medical devices. Mm-hmm. Our manufacturing facility is actually in Carpinteria, but we're headquartered in Santa Barbara, and we distribute throughout the United States and internationally, actually. So pretty good for a business that started out of our garage. Was it the plan all along? No. My focus was in building our business and opening up new distribution channels and becoming a little bit more vertically integrated. But like I said, I'm very, very passionate about serving our constituency in Washington, D.C. I think we have some very good policy reforms that can make Congress a more functional institution that will have long-term implications on the direction that we're heading in our country. And I think more.
Are there any policy reforms specifically that you'd like to address?
There's a number of them, and we could address them today if you would like. Some are more focused on the functionality of Congress and the federal government. You know, I think if you look at Congress today, they're not held in very high esteem. And regardless to what the majority is there, you know, we had a point in time where it was a full Democratic majority. Now it's both chambers are held by the Republicans, and yet still little is actually being done. And so I think you could attribute that to the functionality. You look at our national debt, for example, it's nearly $18.5 trillion in debt. That's egregious, in my opinion. How are you ever going to pay for that? And this is something that's really going to affect the next generation in a very pronounced way. And that all comes back to budgeting. You know, for individuals, for myself, I can't spend more than I take in. Our business, we do baseline budgeting. We try to project what we'll be spending and how much we'll be spending. But we lay a budget every single time, and we never spend more than we take in. We meet, you know, we make that budget. We meet payroll because that's what we're expected to do. And I think it's important that the folks in Washington, D.C. are held to that same standard that you and I are held to, Randall. And so while I was working up there, I saw this budget process, which – you know, you have what they call the authorizations and appropriations process, which kind of culminate within one short period of time. So there's very little oversight from Congress on where the money's actually being spent. When people discuss doing things in a bipartisan fashion, there's not even room for discourse or dialogue on these things, on how they could improve programs so they're actually effective, how they could integrate technology into them to reduce spending, make them more efficient. And so a proposal that I've put forward is going to a biennial budget, a two-year budget structure. So for each Congress, there's one budget. This is something that a number of states actually have and budget on a biennial budget. One of the most solvent municipal governments in Santa Barbara County, for example, like Goleta, is on a biennial budgeting system. So this is not a novel concept. It's something that's worked at the local level, at the state level, and it's something I think could dramatically improve the functionality of Congress, allow for there to be a bipartisan discussion on things, and in addition to that, allow for improvements on things that they're already using.
Now, 2016 will be a presidential election year, which typically brings the average age of the voter down. You are young, and when it comes to serving in Congress, the average age of members currently serving in the House of Representatives is 57, so you are less than half their age. Why do you believe you're ready to go to Washington now?
I think anytime anybody says that they're absolutely ready to go there and serve, I think they're underestimating how difficult it will actually be. I'm very fortunate to have had the experience of working under the chairman of the Energy and Power Subcommittee in Congress as a legislative assistant. So I actually assisted and worked on legislative stuff and helping to move it through both chambers of the House and Senate. So I actually do have, out of all the candidates, a good deal of experience of how to do the legislative process and the parliamentary
procedure. The inner
procedure.
Workings of Congress.
Sure. And I guess if you see that, you either want to run as far away from it as possible or you dive in head first to see what you can do. And I think effectiveness is something that's really important as well. That in combination of you know, playing team sports my whole life, one thing that I was very, very passionate about doing as a kid and what my goal was to play football at UCLA, you learn to work with people from all sorts of different backgrounds behind a common purpose. That in combination of you know, growing up, I've been working since I was old enough to walk. You know, my father invented several products for repetitive stress injuries. My mother went back to business school to learn how to run a business. And, from licking stamps, packing boxes, taking inventory in our garage, we've now built a business with our family that has been very successful. So when you talk about having over 70,000 small businesses and family-owned businesses in the Central Coast, you know, I'm a third-generation rancher. Agriculture is extremely important here. Water is a significant issue. Do I feel qualified? Absolutely. I think that there is, and many other people do as well. There's a number, as I said, of elected officials here. Leaders within our community have endorsed and backed me as well. Members in the United States Congress and in the Senate have endorsed me as well. And I also think one of the largest bodies that's underrepresented, which is unique to my age, is the next generation of voters. And so when you identify and look at every single policy that is being created today, that's going to have, like I said, the most pronounced effect on the next generation. It's the next generation of voters that are going to have to work with this. So I think it is important to have a voice that could represent a voting bloc that is going to be the most prominent one in the next 5 years.
Do you believe as a member of Congress there would be any downside to being in your 20s?
I wouldn't. Just by virtue, again, from my time working on policy up there, people want to get behind and work with people who have good ideas and the ability to execute those ideas. And so, again, I'm supported by several members of Congress. Some of the ones that I know are hard workers, and there's already a base of people. And you also, they have what they call caucuses that you build. You know, it's groups of representatives coming together behind a common purpose, a certain issue. They're bipartisan. And so there's actual infrastructure there to, if there's a specific issue that you want to deal with, it doesn't discriminate based off of age. It's more your aptitude and capacity and ability to do the job. Our founding fathers, if you look at the Constitution, had three requirements, and that's that you're 25 years old, that you're a resident of the state, and that you get 50% plus one of the vote. So I certainly have two of the three, and working to get the third, which is the majority of the votes here. And I'll be working hard to earn the trust and the support of the people throughout the Central Coast over the course of the next year.
What are your views on oil exploration along the Central Coast and then delivery of that oil?
Sure. And this is something that is extremely significant based off of what happened recently in Santa Barbara. This has to be done in a very safe and environmentally friendly fashion. We recently had an oil spill with the Plains All American Pipeline down in Santa Barbara. In 2011, Congress passed the Pipeline Safety Act of 2011 with mandatory requirements that needed to be implemented through the Department of Transportation, which is an agency under the executive branch. And to date, I think less than a third of those mandates have actually been enforced or implemented, which is part of the reason why this actually happened. And so it's important that these things actually get implemented, that there is strict oversight. We need to have emergency shutoff valves. We have to make sure stuff like this does not happen. You know, I grew up in Santa Barbara where we really do appreciate our beaches, and you go throughout the Central Coast, but there's also a need for energy. So, you know, approaching this in a very safe and environmentally appropriate manner, but also recognizing that there is a demand for energy, and we need to continue exploring all opportunities as we move forward.
Along the lines of transporting the oil, Phillips 66 is proposing a rail spur to the company's Santa Maria refinery just west of Nipomo. Communities up and down the Southern Pacific rail line have expressed concern over an increase in oil trains. Most recently, the San Luis Obispo County League of Women Voters has expressed concern as well. Can you share your thoughts with us on whether this project should move forward?
Now, is that put before the Planning Commission or?
The Planning Commission will hear it as soon as the final EIR is released.
Okay. Well, I need to take a look at the EIR before I guess I could express any sort of opinion on that.
PG&E is currently asking the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to renew its operating permits for the two reactors at Diablo Canyon Power Plant. Do you support studies that assert that the plant is seismically safe or those who express concern over those very studies?
I think it's important to listen to both sides. I think, again, the most important thing to note is that it is safe. But at the end of the day, recognizing that nuclear energy is actually the cleanest energy that you could have, from my understanding.
Terms of, like, being carbon-free.
Sure. But at the end of the most important thing is that it is safe, and that's what the determination that we'll have to make.
Finally, as the vice president of a business on the Central Coast, what are your thoughts on the current minimum wage in California and nationally?
I'm a big believer that the private sector is the best driver for wage. I think right now with the regulatory burdens, the complexities within the tax code, it makes it very, very difficult. Plus, a number of the other rules that have been implemented on top of small businesses, it makes it very difficult to do business and to employ people and to grow your business. I think it's very important that we, and this is another thing when you talk about reform in Congress, is there's a number of rules and regulations that are being issued from the bureaucracies within the executive branch that I believe need to become back for review and see how it's having an economic impact on certain communities, whether it's actually worthwhile or not. And so that's another reform that I would approach. But again, I believe that the best way to improve the wage gap is through those types of efforts.
Justin Fareed, candidate for the 24th Congressional District. Thank you so much for being on Issues and Ideas.
Randall, I really appreciate you having me on. Would love to come back anytime.
And you are listening to Issues and Ideas here on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Randall White.